it might be uncomfortable to admit. But if we're going to be honest, we do have to admit that one of the great pleasures of life is to hate other people and groups of people. One pleasure in life is to say, take a hot shower when we're cold. Another is to eat our favorite food. And perhaps for some people, take a cold shower. And another could be to sleep in. Another could be to scratch an itch. But a tremendous intellectual and emotional pleasure is to hate someone and be able to say, you suck, or that group of people sucks. Those people over there, they're really bad. They're really evil. Right? They're worse than me. Why is this such a great pleasure? One way to think about it would be that insofar as I conceive myself as X and you, or a group, or as Y, then I am other than you, and I have my need for self-esteem and superiority. I want to think of myself as the main character and think well of myself. And we see that all such sorts of well-thinking about oneself of this variety are relative in nature. Meaning, the only way that I can be, for example, tall is if there's people that are shorter than me. I could be the tallest person amongst all human beings, but relative to a giraffe, I'm still short, or a fully grown, normally sized giraffe. I need people to be short, to be shorter than me, for me to be taller than some people. In order for me to be smart, or at least, again, as it's conventionally understood, somebody has to be dumber than me. In order for me to be moral, again, not in every sense of the term, but in a particular sense of the term, somebody has to be moral. I have to be more righteous than somebody else. In order for me to be beautiful, in a certain sense of the term, likewise, because I'm more beautiful than you. I'm stronger than you, the same thing. I'm wealthier than you, right? Wealth is relative. In my, on my street, I might be the wealthiest person. But in my community, I might be average. And in my nation, I might be in the bottom 5%. Right? I can't just say I'm wealthy, period. Perhaps if I'm the wealthiest person on earth, then I can say relative to all other individuals, I'm the wealthiest. But say relative to a mega corporation, relative to a government, I can still be, obviously depending on which sort, I can still be dirt poor. So all of that is relative. And consequently, when I think of myself in particular narrow terms, it is absolutely essential for my self-esteem, for my emotional needs, to have other people and other groups to compare and contrast myself with. Now, I can hate, for example, and elevate myself above some or another group that I consider to be qualitatively other than myself, that I have no belonging to. For example, that tribe over there, I've never been a part of that tribe. I have nothing to do with them, but there exists in my mind that concept of that other. And they can then serve that role. Or it could be, I can be self-hating. It can offend my self-image as a very accepting person to hate somebody else. Right? So then I hate people that are like me. That can also be a unique satisfaction. I'm tall, I hate other tall people. I'm short, I hate other short people. It might be a little bit rarer because I would have to kind of other myself from qualities that are my own. For example, I can say that, you know, most people with my hair color are really stupid. I'm not, right? But most people are. So I'm kind of self-hating, but at the same time, pulling my particular self out of that heap of the other similar selves that I do hate. So there's many dynamics here, but basically there is that satisfaction. And as it concerns individuals, likewise, right? I probably have a number of people in my mind who I compare myself to. I can know them personally or not. I can imagine them and just have, an imaginary conception of what a successful person is, what it means to make it in life, right? But what it means to not make it, but it would be fulfilling that same role of giving me that satisfaction. However I'm doing in life, at least I'm not like you, bum. right? At least I'm not as big of a loser as you over there. I don't suck as much as you. Right, so anyhow, we get the point. And it has to, again, be admitted how pleasurable it is and how unwilling we're going to be to give up that pleasure unless we can find something obviously and substantially higher than it. We see that that pleasure of hatred is, in fact, what motivates so much conflict and animosity between individuals and between groups. But because it doesn't sound so good, it can make me look like a clown, right? and me look like the bad guy or girl. If I admit that, I try to find cover-ups for my hate. Really, the reason that I'm fighting, say, that group over there is because I hate them. They're fulfilling this function in my psychology. I can feel superior to them. I can feel that they're the evil, dark ones, and I'm the good and the light, and so forth. That's the true reason. It's very pleasing. It's awesome. It's great. I hate you, right? And it gives me meaning to life even, right? I have something to fight. That's the real reason, but I can't say that. If I don't want to, again, make myself look bad, I'm not going to just say, oh, the reason I'm ready to kill maybe millions of people that are of this class, of this variety, is simply because I hate them and it brings me so much pleasure and it's so awesome to do so. I'm not going to say that. So I can find rationalizations. I can say, really, the reason that I hate that group of people is because they did this and they did that and so forth. The fact, however, that I am rationalizing and providing reasons that are not really honest can be revealed by the fact that there's many, many different reasons to pick from to hate, right? I can hate you because you're more successful than me. I can hate you because you're less successful than me. I can hate you because you look like this, or I can hate you because you look like that. I say that I hate you because in a personal relationship, you didn't take out the trash. Now you take out the trash, and I still hate you. Now it's because you didn't, you know, comb your hair or whatnot. I can hate a given group because I say that they did such and such thing to my ancestors or to me. Now they fixed that somehow. It's something else. So again, the real thing here is just that emotional satisfaction, that essential function that hatred and projection plays in my psychology. As long as I have that need, I'm going to find someone or something to hate one way or another, be it the other completely, or be it people that are like myself, or be it even myself. I can hate myself and project onto myself and be full of loathing and all of that. So anyhow, we said that as long as I have this need, I'm going to search for that group to hate or that person to hate. And I'm not going to give that up unless I have something much more valuable than it. Just like if I have $100, I'm not going to exchange it for $50. But if somebody offers me $200 for my $100, that would make sense for me to give away my $100 or an object that is worth for me $200. And just so here, we need something in order to give up our need for hatred and projection. We need something higher that is more valuable than it. While fully granting that it is extremely, again, pleasurable and can bring a lot of meaning to our life, and we certainly seek for it. So what would that be? One thing to ask would be, what is truly the relation of myself to the other, to what is not me? We say that initially the self can be conceived in very narrow, particular terms. If I'm an adult, I can think back to my earliest memories and what it was like to be me. Back then, what it's like to be me is I'm this little bundle of needs, of desires, of fears, of anxieties, and such that is diametrically opposed to, and that stands in contrast with this infinite, mysterious, sometimes terrible, dreadful world. Right? Even basic things, the thunder, the lightning, the natural phenomena, other people, the big scary adults, all of that. And I start out there. But then if I do mature, that process can be one way, obviously, out of who's to say how many ways to think of it could be that of assimilating what before was not me into myself. So, for example, I'm a child and I stand in opposition to the adults. That's one big category. The adults, they're all powerful, they're all knowing, they can hurt me, they can help me, they can not give me lunch. They can make me, well, hopefully they won't do that, but they can make me go to sleep early, all of that. The adults. Now, if I myself become an adult, it would be nuts for me to have that category in my head. I myself am 20, 30, 40, and so forth, but I still have in my mind this category, this one broad class called the adults. Not me. I'm not really an adult. It's them, the adults. That would be obviously pathological immaturity. If I have matured, eventually I assimilate the class called the adults into myself. Now I'm also an adult. Now I don't stand opposed to this huge collective of individuals called the adults. Me too, I'm the adult. All right, let's say that I want to try something new. I don't know how to drive. So I have in my mind this category called the drivers. It's all one homogenous class of individuals. And I can be afraid of them, I can look up to them or look down on them, I can be intimidated by them, whatever it might be. But it's this one class, the drivers. Now I myself learn how to drive, I can no longer be in opposition to the drivers, unless I'm really nuts and I somehow say I'm not a real driver. They are something that I've become a driver. So I've assimilated this concept into myself. And I'm very, right now, opposed to a class that I call the wealthy. I'm at the beginning of my own financial journey, and I have this, again, idea in my head that there's this subset of individuals that are qualitatively other than me, such as are called the wealthy. Now, likewise, as with the other examples, I can be fearful of them, I can kind of be jealous of them, I can look down on them and say, they're all bad people because they're more successful than me, and I have some kind of unhealthy relationship with that concept. Now, let's say that I succeed and I myself become wealthy. Well, same thing. Right? I've taken in that concept into myself. I've expanded my sense of unity to encompass that concept, and now I should no longer be thinking the wealthy. Obviously, there's classes and there could be the wealthier. Well, let's say now I'm the wealthiest person. Well, who am I going to project onto? What class am I going to have? Hey, it's me. I can't. It's me. So, or in personal relationships, right, there is that person that I find very attractive. They intimidate me, maybe, or I'm jealous of them, or whatever it might be. Now, let's say that person becomes my spouse, and I assimilate them into my sense of self. It's no longer the other over there. Obviously, you can return to that all kinds of shades of gray, but generally speaking, it's now part of me. I've grown to encompass this other individual. And obviously, we can offer endless such examples. The whole process of knowledge. I don't know something. Something lies outside of my present selfhood, sphere of self. Then I know it. I take it into myself. So we see that the general trend here, which appears to be healthy and wholesome, would be a sort of assimilation of what at present is alien content into the sphere of myself, a trending toward unity and wholesomeness, and an integral kind of all-encompassing sense of selfhood, such that is predicated on at present something or someone being the other. If I'm left purely to my own devices, I can't sustain this process of maturation. If obviously super criminal parents were to leave their child in a locked room, goodness forbid, and not speak to him or her, and not educate him or her, and withhold contact with other people from him or her, that child can never, simply by thinking to him or herself, develop and grow. I have to encounter the other. I have to encounter what is not me, and then try to assimilate it to me in order to grow. New knowledge, new people, new facts, new experiences, new concepts, all of that. I have to, so to say, conquer it, right? Now, obviously, I can subsume it into my egoism and selfishness and my self-images. That would be a pseudo approach here, right? Because then I would be changing reality to accommodate myself as I now am, instead of changing myself to accommodate reality as it is. But if we do things genuinely, right, then we sustain that process of growth. Again, let's say that right now I have this concept of the fit people, right? But I don't have the courage or the knowledge to truly make myself fit. So I make myself fit in a pseudo way, right? My workout consists out of moving the junk food from the bag to the mouth, something like that. I haven't then really assimilated this other concept into myself. I haven't changed myself to accommodate that reality. I've changed that reality to accommodate myself and my laziness. So it's not going to work. I have to really change myself in light of such concepts, in light of ideas and so forth. But anyhow, assuming that process is genuine, that seems to be the general trend of our development. I take what is not me and I change myself and it becomes me. Now, in connection with the initial point, if I insist on hating a given person or a class of people, then what is the obvious obstacle to my development? It would be, of course, that I cannot assimilate that concept into myself. It is permanently other than what I would take myself to be. And consequently, I myself must need be permanently fractured. I cannot truly be whole and wholesome and unified, because in my own a perception, meaning my experience, there is this other that I refuse to assimilate to myself. But it is still in my experience, and consequently me, myself and I am fractured. Right? I think that it is truly other and out there. But think, for example, if I pass out or I go to sleep, whoever I hated, whatever group I hated, it disappears. So when I wake, I think of it, it's in my experience, so it's me. I'm the one that's fractured. I'm the one that hates part and parcel of myself. And consequently, while I insist on that, I cannot truly develop. I cannot truly grow in a way that I otherwise could. So that would be kind of what we're giving up if we insist on hating others, if we insist on projecting. Again, in my mind exists the concept of, to use an aforementioned example, the drivers. I want to hate the drivers. Right? I formed this concept, absurdly, that it's a homogenous concept, that the most defining thing about millions or billions of people is that they drive. But for my own selfish purposes, I formed this concept, and now I hate this concept. Oh, those drivers, they're all bad. Right? Now, as long as I insist on that, I'm stuck here in my own little corner of pettiness and self-centeredness and insanity, right? Hating this this other, right? With a split, with a divide in my own experience. And that's exactly how it's going to be until I conquer this hatred, such as by myself becoming a driver or just thinking a little bit about it and seeing how insane it is to have this one, again, group of people that I call the drivers. What does that mean? Right? Until I do that, I'm going to remain in that corner. But if I do that, then I can continue to expand. I can continue my progress and development. And that is obviously to my true and highest interest. Now, with that said, avoiding such hatred, such othering, such projection is obviously very different than passing just judgments, and just and reasonable judgments as to what is and is not conducive to our good, right? And to our health. So, for example, one could say, you know, I really dislike people that hate others. In fact, I hate other people that hate others. I hate groups that hate others. In so doing, we see that I commit the very same fallacy. Saying that I hate those who hate, I'm creating that very same developmental roadblock that those who hate somebody else have in their own life. So here instead, what could be done, right, would be to acknowledge the conditions that are and are not conducive to human growth and development. For example, I can say that something like comparatively simple as physical illness is not desirable for us. I want to be healthy, and I want everybody to be healthy, ideally, right? To avoid the flu, right? To avoid colds, to avoid all kinds of issues, right? Of course. And yet, that's one thing, and saying the sick people, making this category, which does or does not include me, and then hating it and projecting onto it and using it for those purposes of satisfaction, that's a very different matter. We get the point? So I can say, for example, that it's great for a person to get educated per their capacities and so forth. I'm an advocate of that. That's one thing. Saying here, the uneducated, right? There's that class. I hate them. They're so lousy. They're beneath me. That's a different thing. saying that it seems certainly so that in order for a person to properly progress and to attain to their true happiness, I have to be, an individual has to be moral, has to mind moral realities such as your rights and your privileges and not stealing and not perniciously lying and cheating and murdering and all of that. Absolutely. That applies to me, that applies to you, that applies to all. That's one thing. Saying or having in my mind the concept, the immoral, all of you, whoever I place in that category, who I am better than, whom I am more righteous than, that's a different thing. And so forth and so on. And I can even pass a judgment and say, for example, some or another cultural trend is not conducive to good health or sanity. It's bad for my brothers and sisters, other human beings. One thing, saying that group of people right there, right, defined by their culture, defined by their background or something like this, they are inferior than me. Right? They all suck. They're all losers. That's a different thing. So hopefully we get that distinction. Again, in summary, hating and projecting are tremendously pleasurable. We have to admit that. That is the driving force, the reality behind so many conflicts and so many, so much friction that we encounter in our personal and public lives. I may give rational justifications. The reason that I hate this group of people defined in terms of, again, politics or background or personal attributes is because they da 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 da. But the reality is that if I do, in fact, hate them, it would be because they are fulfilling, or that hatred is fulfilling an essential psychological role. It's permitting me to feel good about myself and to compare and contrast myself with others and so forth. It has to be acknowledged that that is pleasurable and that is, those are real desires that we do have. Secondly, we can grant that those desires will not be given up unless we have something higher to shoot for. What would be that higher something to shoot for? It could be described as a unity and wholesomeness of selfhood, such that can only come about when we integrate and assimilate what is at present alien to ourself into ourself. When I cease having these concepts of the other, right? The drivers, the restaurant goers, the wealthy, the successful, the group over there. When I stop doing that and I assimilate all of these concepts into myself and I keep progressing and developing, then and only then I can attain to the kind of selfhood that can truly bring me happiness and goodness. Therefore, it is worthwhile to give up our hatred and our projection. With that being said, even were we to so do, that obviously does not dismiss the absolute essentiality for or concerning the human good to differentiate between different things in life. For example, I don't have the category of the poisoned, right, in my mind, whom I'm projecting concerning which. But at the same time, I grant that poison is a real thing. I can, unfortunately, drink something that can make me sick, at least, if not at worst. I don't say, oh, everything is equal, right? I can, goodness forbid, drink bleach for brunch. Why not? It's all equal. I'm not judging. I'm not projecting. No, it's not all equal. Right? And we're not all equal morally and ethically or intellectually or in any really significant way. That's not the point. The point is to cease projecting and is to cease hating and instead wish for one's own good and the good of others. And that entails noting all relevant differentiations. I have to say that my baby is a baby. I can't cease to note that because I have ceased to have the concept of the other in my mind, right? There's no other. It's all good. There's no difference between babies and adults. And no, absolutely not. There absolutely are differences. It's just that I don't have some kind of class, again, in my mind that I am projecting concerning which and hating. So hopefully we get the point and we can think about it. Thank you for listening.